The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 5th chapter, text number 7, given by His Holiness Srila Satsvarupa Das Goswami, given on October 25th, 1994, in Bombay.
Translation: Hiranyakashipu advised his assistants, "My dear demons, give complete protection to this boy at the Guru Kula, where he is instructed, so that his intelligence will not be further influenced by Vaishnavas who may go there in disguise." Purport: In our Krishna consciousness movement, the tactic of dressing oneself like an ordinary karmi is necessary because everyone in the demoniac kingdom is against the Vaishnava teachings. Krishna consciousness is not at all to the liking of the demons of the present age. As soon as they see a Vaishnava dressed in saffron garments with beads on his neck and tilak on his forehead, they are immediately irritated. They criticize the Vaishnavas by sarcastically saying, "Hare Krishna," and some people also chant "Hare Krishna" sincerely. In either case, since Hare Krishna is absolute, whether one chants it jokingly or sincerely, it will have its effect. The Vaishnavas are pleased when the demons chant Hare Krishna, because this shows that the Hare Krishna movement is taking ground. The greater demons, like Hiranyakashipu, are always prepared to chastise the Vaishnavas, and they try to make arrangements so that Vaishnavas will not come to sell their books and preach Krishna consciousness. Thus, what was done by Hiranyakashipu long, long ago is still being done. That is the way of materialistic life. Demons or materialists do not at all like the advancement of Krishna consciousness, and they try to hinder it in many ways. Yet the preachers of Krishna consciousness must go forward in their Vaishnava dress or any other dress for the purpose of preaching. Chanakya Pandit says that if an honest person deals with a great cheater, it is necessary for him to become a cheater also, not for the purpose of cheating, but to make his preaching successful. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sanyavadi Paschatari Satani. As Hiranyakashipu is very concerned that his son not be influenced by the outsiders, the Vaishnavas, we are also concerned that the members of the Krishna consciousness movement, adults as well as children, not become affected by outsiders or non-devotees. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada, on the orders and inspiration of his spiritual master and the previous acharyas, has developed these centers which are right in, you could say, the enemy camp, or they're in the midst of Maya. And this Juhu Hare Krishna land is a prime example of a flowing interaction with the outside world and the temple. The gates are open and people are welcome to come, and they certainly are coming. And devotees are going out. It's not that we live in some secluded place or make it like a fortress to keep it out. Because how can you keep it out? It's contradiction that you want to preach and you don't want to have anything to do with any perception of Maya. You have to see it. You have to hear it. The non-devotional sounds and the non-devotional sights, if you live in the midst of the non-devotees, even smell their activities, meat cooking or so many other obnoxious things, and touch and everything. So how do we protect ourselves if we deliberately put ourselves in the midst of all these activities? And then why do we put ourselves in the midst of these activities? So as far as protecting ourselves, that we have to do by making a fortress, as I said, not a fortress of bricks and a big gate to be always closed, but one in your own heart and in your mind, where Krishna consciousness is firmly established there and the outside influence cannot come in. Or also, that's the most inner fortress, but also a householder, for example, he may live in the midst of the city, but within his home base, he keeps the influence out as much as possible of the outer world and makes a temple atmosphere. And also, in the temple, when people come into this temple, they should not bring their influence in, but they should come in and be influenced. And it's not that the members of the temple, which could happen by gradual osmosis, you know the chemical word osmosis, whereby primitive animal will eat just by taking food in through all its pores. So just by being somewhere, you soak in the surroundings. We used to use the word vibes. Just by being around a certain atmosphere, you pick up the influence of that place. Every place has got an influence. And you can even, a sensitive person can even pick it up, what the influence is. And like the influence when you, the atmosphere of New Delhi, it's not exactly the same as Bombay or New York, it's not the same as some other place. But every place has its own influence on you. And it's very hard not to be influenced as a tiny living entity, just like the little microbe and his osmosis. So, unless we're careful, actually, all the people coming to Hare Krishna land, they could be gradually converting the devotees into becoming non-devotees. That doesn't happen. Because the activities in the temple are very, they're conducted in a very first-class way, and everyone is partaking in them. So that we're actually purified, following the four rules, worshipping the deity. You notice very early in the morning, not so many visitors come. So the devotees are very attentive to all their worship. And then when people start coming, and they may bring in here, although they may not be allowed to smoke and this and that, they may bring in nonsense. And nonsense is liable to come in so many ways. By television, by newspapers, by prajalpa. And if it doesn't come in, then we go out to do Krishna's business. And there especially, we are in the midst of it. So I'm making 2 points here. One is that our home base, whether you call it the heart, your the home base of your individual jiva, body and soul combined, or the home base of living in the temple or your grihastha apartment, that should be like a fortress to keep out the maya in its different forms. So even if it does seep in by stray sounds, stray smells, you're not going to be reading the newspapers, you're not going to be watching the television. If you do, then you're going to be finished. Even though you say you would like to be a devotee, your attraction will be overwhelmed by the powerful but obnoxious maya influence. So we don't sympathize with what Hiranyakashipu is saying for his purposes. He's afraid. What's going on here? How could my boy be speaking this words of the enemy? I try so hard to keep it out, but it's coming in. I don't know how it's coming in. So we're glad that Prahlad is a devotee. But the same, as the enemy, or we were saying there's no enemies, but as the opposing party to the demon, we also don't want them to contaminate our children in Gurukul by their influences, or the members of the Krishna conscious movement, including each and every one of us. Therefore, we have to be very vigilant about this. The answer is not to flee the battlefield. That's a different part. That's a different program in Krishna consciousness. To go to a place where, as far as possible, there is no outside influence, where the water is pure, the air is pure, in the rural place, and make a farm there, and demonstrate, it's also done for preaching, that you can live off the land and you can live from the cow. You don't need to live in the city. And you can depend on Krishna, and all the members can be happy in Krishna consciousness there. But even more is emphasized the center in the city, because Bhakti Sananda Saraswati reasoned that there's so many lost souls there, so that's where we should be, because then we can immediately give them Krishna consciousness. So this is the aside from protecting ourselves by pure surroundings, we also protect ourselves by the sense of mission that we have, and the faith that we have, that why are we here? It may occur to a devotee at different moments, if he's in the city and he's, or the temple's in the city, and it's not a good, there's so much noise around, he's saying, why are we here? Why have we come here? Prabhupada, he told a small audience about his own mission in 1965 when he was uptown in Manhattan. He said, here I am in the greatest city in the world, New York City, but I'm not happy here. If I was living in my Vrindavan, I have no anxiety there of any kind. Then, why have I come here? Because I have a message for you people. My spiritual master told me to spread Krishna consciousness. So, that sense of mission makes the devotee happy, and he doesn't get weakened, even when he would potentially get disturbed by the surroundings. When Prabhupada visited a temple in another big city, Rome, Italy, he visited in 1974. They had a location which was right in, near the downtown. And the temple president apologized to Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, I'm sorry that you're here, but it's so noisy for you. And Prabhupada said, no, this means you have a good location. He gauged his personal discomfort of staying in a place where it was noisy. He gauged it as good for preaching, because you go right out the door and there you are, where you can preach to people about Krishna consciousness. So we have to have faith. The faith comes in the word of our founder Acharya, our spiritual master, and the words in the Shastra, that any kind of Krishna conscious activity will be effective. And the non-devotees will get, you can say, contaminated in a spiritual sense. They will get affected. They will get influenced. It's a war of influence. Shall we convert them or will they convert us? And it appears that they're much, much stronger than we are. But we will not get influenced, whereas they will get influenced, because our activity is more potent than theirs. Our activity is pure, absolute Krishna. And he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Their activity is Maya Devi, very powerful, but always she's ashamed to come before Krishna. Where there is Krishna, there is no Maya. So when Krishna asserts himself, when Maya retreats, as long as a devotee is vibrating or thinking or acting Krishna consciousness, he'll always be protected by powerful Krishna. But when he stops, then he could potentially become another conditioned soul and get engulfed. We have to have faith that preaching is affecting people, and that it is our duty to do it one way or another. Hare Krishna land, where we are now, is maybe the most popular of all the temples in ISKCON, with possible rivals of Mayapur and Vrindavan in terms of what we can call a casual visit to the temple. You have so many people who come, who just come for the darshan and then they leave. It's not exactly just casual. They wouldn't come here unless they had some piety. But they may have mixed motives, coming hoping to get some material benediction. Like that, it's not simply material, because there's no a cinema, there's no nonsense here. If they were looking for that, they wouldn't come here. But still, sometimes devotees get disappointed in a situation where people are coming who are not so serious, even though they're coming. And they, in any temple this may happen. But here, so many people are coming. And they don't have such a serious intent. Just make their visit and go. But we should have faith that it is very important and it's very effective. And there are so many shastras say that if a person enters the temple of Vishnu, he'll never have to enter the womb of his mother again and be born. If he takes the garland, he'll be free of, from the deity, he'll be free of birth and death. If he takes the Charanamrita, if he hears the holy name, if he takes a little prasadam, gets tremendous benefit. Potentially can go back to Godhead by one of those little activities, seemingly small activities, casual activities. Or if he only makes a little enough advancement, still he can be saved from the greatest danger at death. Nehabi kramanastosti pratyavaya nabhijate svapamap yasya dharmasya chayata mantobaya. Even a little devotional service will never suffer loss or diminution. I remember once in the temple in Boston in U.S. when it was just a storefront we had there. And there was one guest who would come. He liked to do some work. He would build a little shelf for us, for our books or something like that. But he wasn't interested in the philosophy. And devotees got a little impatient with him. And I wrote to Prabhupada and asked, is there any benefit for a person like this? And Prabhupada said, and should we encourage him to come when all he wants to do is some little task but doesn't want to hear much about Krishna? Prabhupada said, yes, if he turns one screw in the temple, I forget exactly what he said, he can become liberated or something like that. Yes, I think he said he can become liberated. So these kind of statements encourage us so that we shouldn't get disgusted with people who come and just do a little something. That's what we're here for. And they are benefiting, and that's what we're meant for. You can't expect so many people. Out of thousands of people, hardly one will know Krishna in truth. So someone may become a devotee. There's another nice story from Mayapur, early days. At one point they had they were teaching a class in English, teaching English to local people in the temple. And the lessons were to read the Krishna book. So it was a preaching idea. But because it was English, many, many people came because they wanted to learn English, not for going back to Godhead. But we gave them some Krishna book. So one time on a morning walk, Jai Pataka Maharaj was telling Prabhupada that they're not going to do it next year because many people came, but out of the whole class, nobody, not one person became a devotee, he said, which was their intention, that some serious persons would come. Prabhupada said, no, you are wrong. They're all devotees because they've all been hearing the Krishna book. So it's a different attitude to take that out of thousands of people who come to see Radha Rasa Vihara, you could say, not one became a devotee. Or you could say, they all became devotees. They all became influenced. Tremendous benefit is there. So this faith must be there in the devotee to carry on these activities. Now another point here, at the end of the purport, Prabhupada talks about cheating. He's making the point, which is maybe not so relevant here in India, that when devotees go out and preach, they can wear Western clothes because people, when they see them, they get irritated. So the average person in India, he doesn't get irritated to see a devotee. This is a Western preaching point. But you can sympathize with your brothers and sisters in the West for whom this is true. When someone sees them, they laugh at them or they'll scorn them. Or at least they won't. They'll be too embarrassed to stop on the street and talk to a person who's dressed like a devotee. So they won't want to stop. If a devotee goes toward them and says, excuse me, sir, the person will say, oh, this is, I don't want to be seen talking to Hare Krishna. So this tactic is necessary. The point, however, that Prabhupada is saying that we become a little clever, that we don't insist that we have to wear tilak and all the marks of we can take off all the marks of the Vaishnava and disguise ourselves as a tactic, so that we can stop a person being unnoticed by different authorities who may not want devotees distributing books or speaking to people, and do the actual business, which is to distribute the books. When I was beginning to work on the library party in America, I asked Prabhupada, can I go out? Well, to do that, we had to go to the university, and you couldn't walk in a dhoti. We were saying that we were salesmen from the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, just like any other press or publishing house might visit the university. So we had to wear suits and ties. And I was a sannyasi, and I said, can I go in the Western dress? I wasn't sure what he would say. Immediately he said, yes, of course, you can wear the Western dress. He said, we're interested in service, not in the dress. But he was so clear on this point. So someone might say this is cheating, that the devotee is disguising himself and is appearing to be not a devotee. So Prabhupada is saying, this can be done, because they're trying to keep the devotees away, and that's they're cheating, and so we can adopt this activity. But we have to be careful about this kind of instruction. This doesn't mean that in ordinary dealings devotees are authorized to cheat. That should never be thought. Although Krishna consciousness is above worldly morality, the devotees, they have to be examples in that also, and not to be seen as liars and cheaters in the name of serving Krishna. If you make certain promises to a person that if you become a life member you'll get these benefits, then you can't be thinking or even, no matter what you're thinking, you have to fulfill the promise, not think, well, Chanaka Pandi says we can cheat in the name of preaching. So we say, you'll get these benefits, and then we don't give them the benefits. No, then how are we different from so many people whose intention is to cheat and not give anything? We say, well, we cheat, but we give them something. That's all right. But the thing that you say that you're going to give them, you have to give them. And if we take a donation, and they say, what is this donation for? We say, it is for this project or that project. It has to go for that. Prabhupada used to say, not a farthing or not a cent or not a rupee or a paise can go for your own, for the preacher's sense gratification or be misspent. But for a while, in the early 1970s, devotees used to go on Sankirtan and they said they would collect money for the starving people in India or Bangladesh, when Bangladesh revolution was going on, wasn't even a country. And for a while, that was very effective. You get a lot of Lakshmi. And then Prabhupada found out that the devotees weren't sending the money to India. And he said, you cannot do this unless every cent that you collect actually goes to India. You cannot say that it's going for that. So even that, you could reason, well, what's the harm that we say something? It may not be true, but anyway, it's for Krishna. But you have to speak the truth, especially in these days when everyone is trying to scrutinize religions and find anything wrong with them, and then it comes out in the media, and what can we say? It doesn't. We cannot say, well, we can cheat. We have to be exemplary in ways that people can understand and can follow. Then they'll be submissive to hear the higher aspects. You don't start out by preaching and by example that we can cheat for Krishna. Someone says, what is the Hare Krishna movement about? This movement is about cheating for God. That's an esoteric, confidential principle which can be used by very expert persons under direct authority. But it's not something that is to be generally done, and not to be done by a neophyte, and not to be done unless Krishna or Krishna's confidential servant, like Krishna said to Yudhisthira, go and tell a lie. Then it can be done. So this is one example. Another example is, in general, although we don't cheat, go against law, or go against acceptable morality, but still we can be clever and we can be creative in trying to present Krishna consciousness. And that's not cheating. It's just up front. For example, people like to be get credit for being charitable. So we know that, and we offer them a program that if you make this donation, there will be a plaque with your name on it. Or in some other way, you will be noticed in the community by your service to Krishna. Oh, very good, then I'll do it. And if that recognition wasn't there, they wouldn't be so enthusiastic to do it. So we encourage that, and Prabhupada, he did that. There's nothing harmful about that. It's just, but it's, you can call it a clever tactic. And creative means entertaining or artistic or interesting ways to present Krishna consciousness, because people are not so pure that they can immediately sit down and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, the opulence of this temple is like that. Prabhupada said that if I advertise that Bhaktivedanta Swami is speaking in an empty field, come and hear him, people won't come. And he said, no one listens to a poor man. So we make a beautiful temple where Krishna can be worshipped, better than the architecture, or at least rivaling the best architecture in the big city, which is for the government or for some other mundane purpose. And then they'll come just to see the beautiful place, and then see Krishna, and then hear about Krishna. That's another example of not cheating, but creative, innovative ideas for preaching. And Prabhupada was expert at that, and he was willing to hear new proposals from his disciples, as long as the parampara is delivered very directly. And some of you know better than I do, he's given so many details about Hare Krishna Land, that there should be an auditorium. It can be used for this, but it can't be used for that. So this again requires great intelligence, not to turn the temple into another mundane entertainment facility for the city of Bombay, but in the same way to attract someone so that they definitely will get Krishna consciousness when they come here. So these are also part of the intelligent means. Utility is a principle of the preacher. In this way, we have to be more intelligent than Hiranyakashipu and get into his palace to give Krishna consciousness to his sons and daughters. But at the same time, when he sends his people to convert the devotees, they should not have any success. And then we will be please Srila Prabhupada. So I raise a number of points. Are there any questions or comments on these things? Yes, Maharaj.
Could you give the detail about the just now, because that just once you put the garland, get liberated, or go to the one symptom. At the same time, there are so many things like offenses, if you do this, if you do that, you will not go to the church. I would like to know the detail about what is actually the meaning of this.
Maharaj is asking for details about the statements that just by some small activity in the temple, like putting on a garland, you could go back to Godhead. But on the other hand, there are so many instructions that things have to be done without offenses to be really effective. One important detail is in the Nectar of Devotion. I think it's on page 113. Prabhupada is quoting some of these great benedictions. He quotes that anybody who sees Lord Jagannath on the cart, and that's the most casual of all encounters, because they'll just be, the Karmi is just walking down the street, he's not coming to the temple, and all of a sudden Jagannath comes around the corner. Yet, because he sees Jagannath, he can become liberated. So Prabhupada explains, he said, some people may doubt that this is actually can happen. And then he says, it is true for some people and not for all. So that statement may apply to a certain person, and it may not apply to another person. And then he goes on to say, but we should not doubt the possibility or the potency of these statements, but understand that the statements are made to attract us to Krishna and that they actually happen. So, it has to do with an individual's mentality when he encounters these things, and it has to do what he does afterwards. A person could become liberated by chanting Hare Krishna and then next minute unliberated by eating the cow's flesh. So that helps explain it also. The potency is there to immediately open the door for liberation if he will continue to follow it. And it will work especially on a more innocent person than the person who's determined to go on with sense gratification. These are some of the details, okay, some of the principles at work. I wanted to make another point I forgot to make about having faith in the effectiveness of our preaching even when we make little gains against Maya. And that is, that's how Prabhupada worked. And when he went to America, and later he described the saying, in like a needle and out like a plow. A needle makes a small hole, so, and a plow makes a big hole. So when he first went to America, Prabhupada was so unimposing. Nobody stopped him. Just they thought he's a very elderly man from India. He can come to our country. He only wants to come for a few months. No harm. He's not going to make any big changes here. And even the Indian man at whose home Prabhupada went to stay, Gopal Agarwal, when he was interviewed about Prabhupada later, he said, he didn't want to make any waves. He didn't want to make any big changes or disturb anybody. He just came here to sell a few books. That's what he thought Prabhupada's mission was, to see if he could, within a few months, if he could sell a few Bhagavatams, place them in the library, and then go back to India and consider his work was done. How little he understood. Prabhupada definitely was trying to make waves, and he did make waves, but he came in so, like a needle, and he even had some expression of feeling overcome when he arrived in Boston, and he saw the city. He said, how can these people take to Krishna consciousness? They're so demoniac. But he went on anyway. So that's the attitude we have to have. He gave another example, like the needle and the plow. He said that when riding on the train, this is definitely an Indian experience of trains, that the train compartment will be very crowded and there's no room to sit. Most people are standing, but there are all some people sitting on the bench. So one man may see just a little, there's just a little space on the bench, spare. He said, excuse me, could you just move over, just let me sit on that bench? The people, of course, may not do that. But if they give him just a little bit, and Prabhupada said, this man, he sits on the bench, and then a little later, somehow or another, he manipulates, he gets a little more space, moves somebody off, and then before you know it, he's stretched out, he's got the whole bench, and he's lying on it. He said, that's how you have to preach, like that. So you have to be very determined to hang in there when all you've got is a quarter of an inch of the bench. So you should feel that way, that, I've got a place. Krishna consciousness is established. And Prabhupada says the devotee feels like that when he starts hearing people say Hare Krishna in a bad way. Oh, Hare Krishna. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna. They're saying it and joking and everything. He said, good, they're chanting. Hare Krishna wasn't even being chanted before. Now it's being chanted. So Prabhupada says he likes this. It means that Krishna consciousness is... The Vaishnavas are pleased when the demons chant Hare Krishna because this shows the Hare Krishna movement is taking ground. So taking ground. Therefore, Prabhupada's own example should be something we can follow to bit by bit take ground and be satisfied even with small gains, knowing that they will accumulate more and more. All right, more? Yes, Mahaprabhu.
About preaching in America is little different than preaching in India. I was told by my Vidanandas, Rishikesh Mahapurdal, that Anadidas, that they have put board outside their office. No sadhu is allowed to enter in our office.
In India?
In India. So, and if I'm a lawyer, and if I go in suit or tie in that dress, you know, and they will immediately, anybody will allow. But if I go in this dress, so it's a really very ticklish point, whether we are satisfying, because up till now we are now working in the line that we must go in dhoti, kurta, in this dress. And there is success in that also. But because you in India also they are becoming, in particular Bombay, they are becoming like any Westerners.
Yeah.
So in this situation, what we are supposed to do is a really very ticklish point. Mm. Sometimes we may be satisfying our own ego.
Hmm. Well, I'm not in a position to make a managerial decision about the Sankirtan parties in Bombay. But here the principle is that it can be, there's nothing wrong in principle with a devotee. If a devotee thinks, well, I can't do that because I'm a devotee, I must always appear as a devotee. No, he can, for preaching, appear like a non-devotee so that he can get Krishna's mission done. If it's absolutely required, there's no harm in dressing like a non-devotee. But it has to be authorized by the particular temple right according to time and place and person. The principle, though, is clear, and the proof is this particular purport, where he even deals with such a subject. Can people wear Western clothes? There's another purport too in which the same thing is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that people can wear Western dress in order to preach.
There is another facility also in India. Even if they dress in the Western style, they can have their tilak. Because most of the many people have many different tilaks. Even in their different places.
Yeah.
At least they can tolerate that.
Yeah. That's better. And in some of the letters where Prabhupada did allow devotees to dress as Westerners, he said, but you should keep your tilak. Yeah.
What has to do with the goal, I would imagine, because Prabhupada's mission was to distribute as many books as possible, and is.
Yeah.
Possible. So in the West, they found that if they approached people and devotees put a shaved head, it was very difficult to actually make a sale. And when they put on Western clothes, then it was easier to make the sale.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to judge the thing, I would imagine, by the result and what your mission is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's best, like when we go in Harinam in the West, distribute the holy name, there was no inhibition in that. And so devotees would go.
Yeah.
Tilak, shaved heads, and put them. The mission was different
than the
goal. Yeah. You kind of have to judge a thing by the result.
Right, judge by the result.
Here in India, when we used to go for book distribution, so particularly during Marathon times, the party takes one Western devotee, then they will beat the record.
But then what?
They will beat the record of book distribution.
Oh.
Because there is special attraction.
Yeah.
Because that also is there.
Yeah.
If you have one instant devotee in the party, then there's special attraction.
So these are all tactics which can be used, judged by the result.
Sometimes people would come to the table and say, because there's this famous book in India called Sukh Sagar, and everybody's after that book. So they would see our Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and say, is this Sukh Sagar? So we say, yeah, that's Sukh Sagar. So is that proper?
I'm not going to comment. Prabhupada, he was telling, they used to tell him Sankirtan stories, and they told him that around, was it 1976, there was a panic for a while in America about energy shortage. That panic will still come again later, but they think they've overcome it. But they were really worried that there's not going to be enough petrol for the cars and everything. So that was very much on people's minds. And then the book distributors, they were saying, this book tells you about the energy crisis, how to solve the energy crisis. When Prabhupada heard that, he chuckled and he thought it was clever and that was permissible. He said, because actually it will solve the energy crisis. But he certainly, but he didn't like the we're collecting for Bangladesh or any or lies like that. Yes.
Like this mala, now we are seeing that, you know, we are teaching by giving 27 beads. You know, I was always doubtful if there is that is any sampradaya doing that or it is a Prabhupada recommended to teach.
That's the first I've heard about. Haven't heard about that before.
Is it proper?
Why not give 108 beads? You give out to people, you give them 20 a mala of 26. So why not give them 108? They don't want 108?
I don't know. Now they are doing that. I am doubtful because then another thing I am observing from like Ramanuja Sampradaya, I think they are also in small groups. Is it a Sampradaya or is it a...
Well, you know, our Sampradaya is not 27.
Yeah. My question is towards me, but I'm the only person who is distributing thousands and thousands of mala. What happened? Initially, and I made those malas. But the purpose was, you know, when I was not coming to the temple at that time, what I have done, that for children, you know, we made small malas. You please start chanting these malas.
Uh-huh.
And we start giving them, they took interest in that. And then finally what happened, then their parents and others start saying that this mala is very convenient. We can develop habit of chanting four malas. So they say spiritually they are also children practically because they are not chanting. So when they start chanting, say 27, then within some time, within month's time, 15 days, 2 months' time, once they take, first of all, this mala is given free of cost, thousands, because somebody is financing me in lakhs. So for that purpose, when we start giving them, they start chanting. And so for this purpose only, so otherwise what they take, first of all, they don't purchase. That mala 108 is costly. Secondly, when we give this mala, they keep in the room and in the ditty room. And this mala, they can change in train and bus and anywhere. So children started doing it, and then their parents started doing it. And finally, the result is that they start chanting.
Yeah.
So I discussed this matter with many people, and so finally they said, if it is working, make an experiment.
So such experiments, they have to be done with a very careful deliberation and decision from top authorities. You have to be very careful not to change the parampara. Any ladies have any questions or comments?
I have a question.
Yes.
You know, you said about great devotees being able to cheat so that they can bring people to Krishna, right? So it's only great devotees that are able to see on the long-term basis and make decisions like that. So what I'm trying to say is, for example, when I was in Scotland, books were being distributed to people, and there are so many people that these books are being sold to help mentally or try to children and things like that. So what happened eventually in Britain is a lot of people began thinking of Hare Krishna, that they're just trying to take their money or trying to cheat people. For example, you gave an example about using people's propensity for charity.
Yeah.
So that they can be engaged in Krishna consciousness indirectly. But what happens in the long term when they find out that their propensity for charity has been used to bring them to Krishna consciousness? Then I think, this is my humble opinion, you know, that later on they might start thinking that these Hare Krishnas were cheating us, they were using our propensity for charity to get us into their thing.
Yeah.
And I think this Krishna consciousness is such a precious jewel. It's so true. We don't need to do this unless someone is really advanced in Krishna consciousness.
I agree. And once that opinion forms, it's very hard to get rid of it. Like say that happens, and then the devotees, the managers say, okay, we got caught, we won't do that anymore. But the people keep thinking of you as the people who did that. He said, no, we don't do that anymore. But, you know, 5 years go by and 10 years go by and the public still think, yeah, we know you. You did that ripoff 5 years ago. We don't do that anymore. So it takes a long time for people to forget mistakes that devotees make. So But yeah, devotees just did some things in America that people still remember us for, and we're just even ashamed to hear that we used to authorize such things. And the people don't forget, so better to just present the thing on its own merit. That's another, the principle, judged by the result, that has many different applications. Something can get some quick results. Say, well, judged by the result, we started some new cheating line and we made, you know, twice as much today than we did yesterday. Let's keep it up. But then the result later will not be good. The result on devotees' minds, now you can judge by the result what it did to our movement to emphasize so much things like just selling paintings and not selling books and everything. The long-term results were not good, although some immediate results were good.